So we are very happy to have Junwoo Hwang today giving us a talk on physics beyond the standard model at the Cosmological Collider. Many of you know Junwoo. Junwoo is a postdoc here at Perimeter. He came to us from Stanford, where he got his PhD in 2017. So he's no stranger to us. With this, Junwoo, go ahead.
Oh, okay. So thank you for the introduction, and thank everyone for showing up to this talk at this very hard time. So I really appreciate it. Personally, I have been coughing for a while, but I have got myself tested, and I do not have coronavirus, so you don't need to worry about me. At least. So don't worry if I cough a little bit during the talk. So today I will be telling you about some of the new searches and new experiments that we designed in the last couple of years to look for physics beyond standard model. So I will first give you a general overview, and then I will go into an example where we are trying to use Cosmological Collider, basically using the universe as a whole as a detector to look for some signatures that are related to Higgs instability. So let's get started. Okay, So I'm a phenomenologist, and what I do is I come up with a nice piece of theory, and then we design experiment to look for it. So for example, here is a nice piece of theory, which is the standard model, and it describes basically everything we see in the lab so far. So the standard model, the success of standard model speaks to the success of the experimental program, which is the collider experiments, which brings our understanding of the universe from somewhere around the EV energy, where we describe everything with atomic physics, all the way to somewhere around the TEV, where we recently discovered the Higgs boson. So the collider program is moving forward in two directions. Either by going to higher and higher energies, trying to produce heavier and heavier particles, or going to higher luminosities, where we try to produce particles that are more weakly coupled. So these are the energy and the intensity frontier of the collider experiments. However, if we think about the only piece of evidence we have for physics beyond the standard model, which is dark matter in our universe, then the dark matter actually points to a much wider range of parameter space. So on the heavy side, which is the range that is covered by the collider experiments, we have these particles called weakly interacting mass particles, or WIMPs, which are the thermal dark matter candidates, and we can look for them with direct detection experiments. So on the other side, however, we can have dark matter that is very, very light. There are these light bosonic dark matter candidates, including the axions, dark photons, and the dilatons, which can have mass as small as order 10 to minus 22 eV, beyond which point the dark matter with the wavelengths is so large that it start to affect the galaxy structural formation. So anywhere in between, we can have nice dark matter candidates, and we can have thermally and non-thermally produced dark matter candidates that fills the whole mass range, as I'm showing you here. So this points to a new, different frontier, or new frontier, which we should be exploring, which is the precision frontier, where we try to build a small scale experiments to look for these light and weakly coupled dark matter candidates. So I have been working in this direction for a while, and here I'm showing you two examples, two experiments that I proposed. On the left-hand side, I'm showing you an experiment that is based on technologies that are used to build atomic clocks. And then on the right-hand side, we have experiments built upon technologies like photonic crystals and single photon detectors. So the atomic clock experiment is used to look for dilaton dark matter, which are extremely light with masses that is in this mass range, in this red circle here. So these dark matter candidates have a mass that is of order 10 to minus 22 eV all the way to somewhere like PeV, where the corresponding wavelength is super long, and the time for the period of oscillation is also can be as long as over a year. So the experiments that we can use to look for them are the atomic are based on atomic clocks. So here, the dark matter candidates we are looking for are these dilatons. As the dilaton dark matter oscillates in our universe through its interaction to the standard model, we introduce oscillation of the fine structure constant and a similar fundamental constant. Now, if we take two atomic clocks, which has a different optical transition frequencies, which depends on the fine structure constant differently, then the ratio of these optical transition frequencies will be oscillating as the fine structure constant oscillates and as the dilaton dark matter oscillates. So by observing these atomic clocks and measuring their ticking rate and see how it oscillates as a function of time, we can get a constraint or get a sensitivity onto these dilaton dark matter candidates. So our proposal was used by two different experimental groups to place constraint on the dilaton dark matter parameter space, which are order of magnitude stronger than existing constraints. So the second experiment is what we call the lamppost experiment, which are designed to look for a dark matter in the EV mass range or with optical frequencies. So here, what we are doing is we are combining two pieces of technology, which are these photonic crystal, which are these dielectric layers here. You can think of them as the anti-reflect coating on your camera lenses. Together, combining it with the single photon detectors, we can build a detector which are very sensitive to the the dark photon and axion dark matter at optical frequencies. You might have heard some discussion in more detail about this experiment from my collaborator Marsha, who gave a talk 2 weeks ago. So I'm not going to go into details, but we recently got funding to build a prototype, and with the prototype, which is basically the size of your hand, you can get into new parameter space that has never been explored before. So these are some of the small scale experiments I personally have worked on. And these experiments allow us to look for these light dark matter candidates. Just like it is for the standard model, we need collider physics to look for these light dark matter candidates that are coupled to us very, very weakly. The experimental program to go forward are to use going forward are these small scale experiments or tabletop experiments. However, this is not what I'm going to mainly talk about today. Today I want to zoom out even further and look up at a much wider range of parameter space. So here I'm talking about all the particles that can be produced at some stage of the universe expansion or evolution and leave their imprints in astrophysics and cosmology. So these particles, their masses are between two Hubble scales. On the left-hand side, we have Hubble scale today. Basically, if a particle is lighter than Hubble scale today, it is massless for experimental purposes and just like our photon. So on the other side, we have Hubble scale during inflation. If a particle is too much heavier than Hubble scale during inflation, or more precisely the reheating temperature, then such a particle cannot really be abundantly produced in the early universe. Anywhere between these two Hubble scales, we can get particles that are produced and they leave their imprints in cosmology, for example. So here, again, I'm showing two examples. The example on the left are based on cosmic axion strings, and we study how they leave their imprints in the CMB, while the example on the right is the one that I will be telling you more about in more detail, which is this cosmological collider, where we use the universe as a whole, as a detector to look for new physics. So first, a little bit more detail about the axion strings. So the axion strings, what we are doing is we are looking for these topological defects, cosmic strings, which can be produced in the early universe. What we discovered is that if the angular direction around the cosmic string is identified in axion field with photon couplings, then we do not only look for these axion strings with this gravitational interaction, but also through this topological interaction with photon. What it leads to is a a pattern in the CMB polarization data, which shows topological polarization rotation that is imprinted like in the figure like I'm showing you here. I'm happy to tell you more details about the cosmic axion strings and how we can look for them in the CMB. So today I want to be telling you about a different example, which is a cosmological collider. What we'll see today is how we can use the universe as a whole as a detector to look for particles that are produced in the early universe, especially during inflation. So before I go into more details about this particular example, any questions? Should I wait for questions?
Yeah, so the other thing I wanted to tell people is you have the option to raise your hand. I don't know how many of you are familiar with Zoom. You have the option to raise your hand at any point during the talk. When you click on the participant list, raise your hand is an option that you see there on the right. The other thing I would also recommend, you can also send questions by typing in the chat. So you can also, there is a chat option, so you can share messages with everyone. So if you feel more comfortable sending your question in writing, that's also a possibility. So feel free, I know this is not the usual colloquium or talk setup that we're all used to, but don't let us stop us from interacting more, okay?
You are welcome to ask questions. Okay, so let me go into the example then. Oops. Okay, so here in this explicit example, what I will be telling you about is a new experimental and a theoretical program of a cosmological collider. And then I will be telling you a nice piece of theory, which is related to Higgs instability and exploring the early universe history about the Higgs field that we know. Then I will be telling you how we can use the cosmological collider as an experiment to look for Higgs instability. Okay. So first, I will be telling you about the cosmological collider. So as I said, here we are viewing the universe as a whole as a detector. To really explain how the cosmological collider work, I want to draw an analogy between the cosmological collider and the real collider, which hopefully you are a little bit more familiar with. So here I'm showing you the ATLAS detector, which is this onion-shaped detector with multiple layers. In the middle, we have the collision point where particles collide. And then like outside, we have the tracking system where you measure particle tracks. And then you have the colorimeter, the electromagnetic and hydronic colorimeter, where you measure energy deposition. And very outside, you have the muon chamber where you can look for muons. So we can plot the universe just like the ATLAS detector, also in the shape of this onion-shaped detector. In the middle, here we have the early universe, the earliest of time, where these primordial perturbations are generated. And then as the universe expands and cools down, you get to the point where the photon start to be observable, and that is the time of the CMB, where we see this 2D surface of the CMB, which already told us a lot of information about the temperature fluctuations, which tells you about the primordial fluctuations as well. So as the universe continues to expand, you get through the dark ages, where you can look for the universe, new signatures with 21 centimeter, until much later, the universe continues to cool down, structural formation happens, and then we can measure these primordial perturbations in terms of galaxies and galaxy clusters as they are distributing in our universe. And that is basically the large scale. Okay. So now we have our detector, we have the collider, and we have the cosmological collider. The next question that we want to understand is what do they measure? So in the case of the collider, as I said, what we measure are these particle collisions, which gives you tracks and energy deposition that you measure in the detector. In the case of the cosmological collider, what do we see? So the thing that we measure are these primordial perturbations and their correlation functions. So the primordial perturbation, I will, throughout the talk, I will write as zeta. And there are correlation functions, in particular, encode information about early universe dynamics, in particular during inflation. So for example, as a leading order effect, which is the power spectrum, is basically a two-point function of primordial perturbation. So here, and that comes, you can compute by computing the two-point function of inflaton perturbations, which is this thing here. The inflaton perturbations you can compute with this diagram showing on the right. The red dashed line is the inflaton. It's basically a propagator. And then the solid black line is the time, conformal time tau equals zero, which you can think of basically as the end of inflation. So from this very simple diagram, which is just a propagator, you can compute the two-point correlation function of the inflaton, which you can translate to a two-point function correlation of density perturbations data. And these density perturbations show up as temperature perturbations, for example, in the CMB, and we can measure them. So here's the analogy. In the case of the collider, we look for particle collisions and energy and moment, energy depositions and tracks. And in the case of the cosmological collider, we are looking for primordial perturbations coming from by measuring these correlation functions. Okay. So of course, we do not just build the LHC to see some tracks and energy depositions. We want to measure something more interesting. And to do that, we will be able to to measure particles. So in the case of the collider, I'm sure this might look very familiar with to you because it's basically the observation of the Higgs boson by the LHC. In the case of the collider, when we try to look for a particle, what we are looking for are these resonances or these bumps. Okay, so the location of the bump and the height of the bump tells you about the particle's mass and its interaction stress. So the question then becomes, how do we measure a particle in the case of the cosmological collider, and how to measure the mass? Okay, and this is the question that is answered in the early literature of cosmological collider physics, and explained very nicely in this paper by Nima and Huan. And here I'm going to just say what they realized. So here I have a particle which is presented by this solid line here, which is a particle that propagates from T3 to T1. As a result, the wave function gets an oscillation piece, which is basically e to the minus I omega t. There represent a particle going from T3 to T1. So in the cosmology, we are more familiarly using, especially during inflation, we usually use this conformal time, which is this tau here, and it is related to the real time t by this function here. So what we do next is we take this oscillating piece here and translate it into an oscillation function of the conformal time tau, which becomes this oscillation function here. Which is an oscillation in terms of the conformal time tau 1 and tau 3. And the oscillation frequency is the mass of the particle in Hubble unit. Okay. So of course, in an experiment, we do not really measure time. We do not measure time or conformal time. So in order to translate this function, oscillating function, to something you can actually measure, we need to answer the question, what determines the time of the event? And this requires us to put this particle in a diagram addressed with the inflaton. So here, again, I have a particle which is propagating from tau 3 to tau 1. And we have a couple of inflatons which is attached to this massive particle. Okay, so these dashed lines are the inflatons. And there are three connections between the dashed line and this solid line at tau equals 0, which means we are looking for three-point functions. So from this diagram, what happens is that a particle is produced at this time tau 3, it's propagated for a bit and it decays away at this time later, tau 1. And what we know is that particle productions and decay peaks at a horizon crossing, where the momentum of the particle is equal or comparable to the Hubble scalar inflation. In terms of the conformal time, this amount to the relation where k tau is order is basically equal to 1. Okay. Now, if we put in this piece of information that a particle production happens at a horizon crossing, then the oscillation in terms of the conformal time become an oscillation of this momentum k3 over k1. And these k3 and k1 you can measure with experiment, for example, in terms of the multiple expansion L in the CMB. Okay. So we can put everything together and write down the three-point function from this diagram. It is depending on two numbers. The first number is the FNL, which tells you how strong the signal is. It's basically the amplitude of the oscillating signal. And then it is depending on this frequency of oscillation mu, which in this case is equal to M over H. So now what you measure to find a particle are these oscillating piece in the three-point correlation functions of density perturbations. And it shows up as oscillating pattern like this. And the amplitude and the frequency of the oscillation tells you about the particle's interaction strength and its mass, just like in the case of the collider. So to summarize this part, what I'm showing you is the following. So on the left-hand side, we saw the collider, how we measure a particle. We measure the bump, and we measure the mass and the interaction strength of the particle. So in the case of the cosmodule collider, what we are looking for are these oscillating patterns. And by measuring the amplitude and the frequency of the oscillating patterns, we also see a particle. Here, we are measuring the, everything in the unit of Hubble scale during a break. OK. So now we know how to look for a particle. The next question is, how do we look for new physics? OK. So to do that in the collider, what you need to tell your experimentalist colleagues are the cross-sections of for the production, some ratios of a cross-section between different channels, production channels, and also the branching ratios. With all of this information, they can see if the particle they are looking at, the bump they found, is actually something that is, for example, here, the standard model Higgs. So what about the cosmodule collider? What are the new physics channels that we have for the cosmodule collider? And that is the question that we want to address when we started thinking about cosmodule collider, and it is basically the points of the recent papers we have on cosmodule collider. But before going into more detail, let's see why it is hard. Okay, so in the case of a collider, you have a lot of control. You decide what particles you collide. You can decide whether you collide electrons or protons. Here in the cosmodule collider, you do not decide which particle you collide. The particle you collide is the inflaton, and that's it. So you also don't decide the decay products. The decay products of these particles which are produced during inflation is again the inflaton, which becomes later the density perturbations. We also do not decide which energy scale we do the collision. That scale is the Hubble scale during inflation. And the collision has already happened once, and we do not get to do it again and again. Okay? So these are the differences between the cosmodule collider and the collider, which makes using a cosmodule collider as a tool very hard. And it is the reason why it takes very long time before people start to come up with new physics channels for cosmodule collider. So later, I will be telling you one particular piece of a theory we can look for with the cosmodule collider. And to do that, I will first need to introduce you to the theory part. And any questions? I guess no. OK, so next, I will be introducing to you a nice piece of theory, which is the Higgs story, or history, which basically is the early universe history of the Higgs boson. What is the dynamics of the Higgs during inflation? And to do that, I need to backpedal a little bit and tell you about this very interesting observation of Higgs instability. So the Higgs instability is an observation that we had after measuring a lot of the standard model parameters, that the only parameter in the standard model that is not multiplicatively renormalized, the Higgs quartic, which means that such a coupling can change sign depending on the energy. actually change sign at some high energy scale of order 10 to 11 GeV. It becomes negative at some high energy scale, V lambda equals zero here, and as a potential will go turn around because the quark becomes negative. So this means that the electroweak minimum we are living in here, which we live in today, is only metastable. It is not stable, meaning that there is somewhere else in the Higgs potential which has a lower energy, but it is metastable, meaning that the decay lifetime or the tunneling lifetime is so long that much longer than the age of the universe that we do not really need to worry about. Okay. So, however, if we think about the same situation very, very early on during inflation, and then the picture becomes more complicated. Here, the inflationary Hubble scale can be very large. It can be much larger than the scale where lambda turns negative. And as a result, the potential basically looks somewhat flat during inflation, and the Higgs can jump around with Hubble scale steps and over this barrier and rolling down to a UV minimum. It can leave the electroweak minimum during inflation to go somewhere else. And this is something that people discovered a couple of years ago, and people have come up with many new theories to resolve this issue. All these models include adding new particles at a low energy scales or introduce a new interaction between the Higgs and the inflaton, and in the hope of stabilizing this Higgs hierarchy, or this Higgs instability. So, however, all of these new models didn't really have a smoking gun signature you can look for, because basically everything that you need to introduce is really, really at really, really high energies. It can be all of order 10 to 11 G. So here I wanted to introduce you a different possibility, a different history, early universe history of the Higgs, where the Higgs is actually allowed to go around, and we do not really introduce new physics below the scale where lambda becomes negative. And the question we want to ask is, can we be in this high scale minimum of the Higgs all along during inflation? And that is the Higgs story that we studied. So here, this picture shows you what happens during inflation. So the blue curve, again, is the Higgs potential. And no matter where you start with, you jump around with Hubble steps until you go over the barrier and roll down to a minimum, which is deep enough such that the Higgs cannot move anymore. And you stay there basically the whole time during inflation. This requires that the UV minimum of the Higgs is bigger than the Hubble scale in inflation, which is much bigger than all of the rest of these energy scales. So of course, we know that we are not really sitting here today, which means that we need to have a mechanism for us to come back to the electroweak minimum we are sitting in today. Okay. And that mechanism is actually provided to you very simply by reheating. So after reheating, when reheating happens, the universe heats up to a temperature that is, can be much bigger than the Hubble scale of inflation. And the standard model mass is reheated, and the reheated standard model mass is going to interact with Higgs boson and introduce a thermal potential to the Higgs boson. And this thermal potential lifts the Higgs potential from this blue line to this red line here, where the minimum disappears and the Higgs is allowed to basically roll down to the point where V equals to zero, which is the point that is preferred by the thermal potential, because that's the point where the symmetry is restored and all the particles are massless. So the Higgs will roll down back to V equal to zero in the very early universe. The universe cools down to the temperature of order a TeV. Electroweak symmetry breaking happens. The Higgs go into its electroweak minimum. Then QCD phase transition, BBA and CMB happen, all the things that we know happens after that. Okay. So what I'm showing you in this two picture is a possible early universe history, which doesn't require us to add any new interaction to the standard model, and which allows the Higgs to explore its potential and be staying at the UV minimum all along during inflation. And the question that I want to address later is, can we look for such a new Higgs story? Can we look for a signature that is corresponding to the fact that Higgs is living in a UV minimum, which is bigger than the Hubble scalar inflation? So if we cannot find a direct signature, then we are basically the same as all of the other models which address this Higgs instability problem. Okay. Question?
Could I ask a quick question?
Yes.
So when you say you don't add any interactions beyond the standard model, you do add an inflaton, right? You're not assuming the Higgs.
Oh, yes. We add an inflaton. Inflaton is a field that is but that's basically treated as a scalar.
Single. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So now I introduced to you the experiment and the theory. Let's see how we can put them together. So just to remind you, in the first part when I was discussing the experiment, we arrived to the point where we are trying to find a new physics channel that we can look for some new physics with cross-module collider. So unlike in the case of the collider, where what we do is we are looking for new particles or new resonances, here we are actually looking for an old particle, some old particles. And these old particles are basically the standard model fermions. But the old particles, the standard model fermions, allows us to look for a piece of new physics. And that piece of new physics is a new Higgs minimum, which the Higgs is living in during inflation. Okay. So in principle, to explain to you what actually happens during inflation, I need to show you how I can compute this diagram, which is a diagram, a one-loop diagram in where we form fermions during inflation. I do not have a large enough piece of board, and it is probably not very instructive to explain all the details. So instead, I will just answer three simple questions, which are written on the left. So the first question is, why do we use standard model fermions? The second question is, how do the fermions couple? And the last question is, what is the small going count signature that we can be looking for with the cross-module collider? Okay, so let's first look at the first question. So why standard model fermions? Well, the answer is actually really, really simple. It's basically because there are many of them. And like the Gauge bosons the Higgs, there are a lot of standard model fermions with very different properties and very different masses. And when the Higgs valve is large during inflation, all of these fermions will have a mass that is lifted by the ratio between the UV valve of the Higgs with the electroweak valve of the Higgs. So in other words, they are heavy. Okay, and they are heavy and they have masses that can be comparable and larger than Hubble scale. And because of the very peculiar feature of the standard model flavor group, we have fermions with very different masses inside the standard model. And these different masses, standard model fermions, basically form a cone with which we can scan the Hubble scalar inflation. No matter what is the Hubble scalar inflation, there is always going to be some standard model fermion with a mass that is comparable to the Hubble scale. And we'll see that effect explicitly in the figure. Okay, so that's the first question. The second question is, what is the coupling that we need to introduce between the standard model fermions and the inflaton? So this is the only piece of new physics that we are adding to have a signal. Of course, if we do not have any interaction, there is no signal. So here I'm introducing an interaction between the standard model fermions and the inflaton. Here the phi is the inflaton, and the f are basically the various types of standard model fermions. I write down the lowest dimensional operator, which respects the shift symmetry of the inflaton that allows it to couple to the standard model fermion. So with the such a coupling, we can get the fermions to be produced at this early time tau 3. These fermions will redshift a bit before they finally redshift and annihilate at a much later time, where this tau 1 and tau 2 are almost equal to 1. So here again, we are seeing this signature inside in a 3-point function of the inflaton, which and this fermion is the particle that is produced in between, which leads to this 3-point function that we are trying to look for. Okay. So for the experts in the room, well, not really in the room, behind the screen, here we are looking for, so once we introduce this coupling, the coupling actually gives you something for free. So the first thing that you see is that if the inflaton is actually rolling, as it is during inflation, this phi dot is non-zero, and it is actually something that is much bigger than Hubble's scale during inflation. So with this coupling, what happens is that the rolling inflaton through this coupling is going to introduce a chemical potential for spin. And this means that it introduces a modification to the fermion distribution relation, which is polarization or helicity dependent. So for the two different fermion polarization, we get a different correction to the dispersion relation for one of them, which is basically this plus minus sign, and for one of them it will be a minus sign, which allows you to produce particles with a large momentum but a very small energy when mu is bigger than the mass m. Okay, so when we have that, what it does is it enhances the non-adiabatic particle production at this time tau 3. By doing two things. The first thing is it alleviates the exponential suppression when you compute a non-adiabatic particle production through this exponential function of omega squared over omega dot. So when you compute this ratio in our theory compared, what we will get is m squared over mu h. Like in the normal case, when you compute this ratio, you get something like a Boltzmann suppression, which is basically the mass over Hubble. So here, if the chemical potential is large, then it allows you to produce particles that is heavier than Hubble without a significant exponential suppression, as long as it is smaller than the geometric mean of the chemical potential and the Hubble scalar equation. So the second thing that a chemical potential does is increase the phase space. So here, instead of producing particles with a thermal distribution like a T cubed, or in case of the inflation, H cubed, here we are producing particles on the Fermi surface with a Fermi momentum that is order mu, okay? So as a result, the surface area is enhanced by mu squared, and we can produce a number of particles that is much bigger. That is of order m mu squared instead of Hubble cube. So in the case when the chemical potential is large, larger than the mass and larger than the Hubble scale, this increase also the signal that we are looking for. So both of these things come from the fact that the inflaton is actually rolling, and combining them allows us to generate an observable signal that is large enough to be seen today. Okay. So that's the second question. So in the end, let me tell you about the last question, which is what is the smoking gun signature? So to do that, I will need to explain to you this somewhat a little bit complicated plot on the left. So here, what I'm plotting is the strength of the bispectrum or the 3-point function that is generated by the sum model fermions. The axis, on the x-axis, I have the frequency of the oscillation, which is set by the strength of the coupling between the sum model fermions and the inflaton. Well, on the y-axis, I have the valve of the kicks in the UV, which is a free parameter in Hubble unit, okay? So the first thing, as I said earlier, is that the fermions are produced when their masses, someone say something? Okay, so when the mass is comparable to the Hubble scaling inflation. So when this ratio is over one, the standard model fermions will be produced. And as a result, different standard model fermions will show up at different locations on the y-axis where basically the VAV in Hubble unit is equal to 1 over the Yukawa coupling of that particle. So as a result, from top to bottom, you have the lightest star model fermion, the electron, all the way to the bottom quark, which is contributing to the signal that you can look for. The various color shows you the contours of the strength of the signal. And here we can get an FNL of order 100, and in much larger places, a factor of 10 or a factor of 1, which are basically the signal strength that we can look for with the CMB and the large scale structure experiments today. So from this figure, I want you to get two take-home messages. The first message is that there is signal coming from different star model fermion at any point along this y-axis, okay, for very wide range of parameter space. So, and that, as I said, is a result of the very peculiar feature of the standard model flavor group. So the second thing is that in many locations, for example, here, for example, here and here, you will be able to not only see one standard model fermion at the same time, but you will be able to see multiple standard model fermions contributing to the signal at the same time. And that is important because that's how we can design our smoking gun signature. So here, if you, yes?
What was the x-axis again, sorry? Like the frequency, like in units of K or something, or like,
So the frequency of oscillation, basically like the, like earlier I showed you like a K3 over K1 to some like I mu power, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the frequency oscillation, this number is basically the mu parameter.
Okay, mu. Okay, sorry. Right.
That's the frequency of the oscillating in terms of the momentum ratio. Yeah.
So we have another question also from Lee. Lee?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. This is a question from a non-expert. What is the basic assumption that you're making here? Is this a generic effect where the standard model fermions will always couple to the inflaton, or is there something special about your inflaton that allows these couplings?
So here, like there's nothing special about the inflaton, but we do introduce a new coupling between the inflaton to the standard model particles, which is stronger than the gravitational strands.
And so that here, you had a dimension 5 or a dimension 6 operator that you wrote down.
Yes, so that dimension 5 operator, the suppression scale lambda can be ordered 10 to the 16 GeV. So if you can think of some string theory at that scale, then basically by integrating out the string dynamics, we think that we can have these high dimensional operators.
So this would be in addition to a coupling in addition to the standard model, outside the standard model.
Yes, that's the only coupling that we introduce, is that is beyond standard model.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So yes, we just got to the point where we come to the point of the smoking gun signature. So as I said, from this plot, we can see multiple fermions at the same time contributing the signal. And by measuring the signal coming from different fermions, we can extract two numbers from the measurement. That is the mass of the particle in Hubble unit and also the strength of the interaction. So though no single particle really tells you very much about what is actually going on, when you see multiple fermions at the same time, you can take the signal, the mass in Hubble unit of different fermions, like M over Hubble here, and take a ratio between the measure value of two different fermions. So here, the Hubble scalar inflation is the same, so it cancels. The VAV of the Higgs is the same during inflation, so it cancels. And the thing that you are left with is basically the Yukawa coupling ratio. And Yukawa coupling is something that you can measure at low energies and predict to high energies with very high precision. And it is also a parameter that didn't really run very much. So if we see a couple of these fermions giving you a couple of these mass ratios that matches with the Yukawa ratios of some other fermions, then we know that we are seeing the standard model fermions contributing to the signal. You see the standard model in the sky. You see a new minimum of the Higgs where the Higgs was living during inflation. So that is basically the signature. So coming back to the analogy that I was drawing between the collider and the cosmological collider. So here I show you one example of a smoking on signature or a new physics channel that we can have for the cosmological collider. Just like in the case of the collider, when we want to do measure a particle's property, we measure ratios. Here, in the case of the collider, a cosmological collider, when we want to understand what is happening in the early universe to the Higgs, then here we are also measuring ratios, but just with of ratios of different particles. So hopefully, I have convinced you in this talk that we can use cosmological collider as an experimental program to look for an interesting piece of theory that is the Higgs instability and the Higgs story in the early universe. And that gives you us some signature that we can look for with the cosmological collider experiments. So there are some other directions that we explored. And one thing is something that you might have already noticed. Here, when I talk about the small fermions, I talk about the electron all the way to the bottom quark. But there is a really heavy guy, the top quark, which is not really in this figure. And that is because the top quark has a much stronger interaction with the Higgs. And when you produce the top quark density is going to affect the Higgs potential through back reaction. And you cannot avoid that. And but luckily, what happens is it is going to create a new dynamical minimum of the Higgs, in which minimum you can look for the signature coming from the top quark by itself. If you are interested, I'm happy to tell you more about this later on. So we are also trying to explore whether we can do something like a jet physics in the cosmological collider case, where we try to produce non-ably engaged groups and look for a splitting of the splitting functions of these non-ably engaged groups, gauge bosons, and look for these non-ably engaged groups through measuring the relations between different point correlation functions that we can measure with these cosmological collider experiments. So I'm also happy to tell you more about it later on if you're interested. So that's basically summarize the example, which is basically represented by this sticker here. And there are some other stickers which corresponds to some of the things that I didn't tell you in very much detail. So the experiment with the photonic crystal, the atomic clock experiment, the axion strings, and then the cosmological collider. So these are the things that have been recently exploring when I was a postdoc at PI, where we tried to either use AMO and condensed matter technology to design new experiments to look for dark matter, or we tried to see what kind of information we can extract from cosmological and astrophysics measurements about particles and objects that can be produced in the early universe and leave their imprints in these measurements of cosmology. So these are the things, type of things I enjoy doing. And I hope I got to put more and more of these stickers in the future on this two-dimensional figure of energy and coupling. And hopefully some of these experiments or searches will be as successful as this one, the collider experiment, which gives us the very nice Stern model of particle physics. And that's all I want to say. Thank you very much.
Great, thanks.
Interesting.
It's also possible to applaud on Zoom by pressing the clap button. But I'm not sure if that reaches anybody.
Oh, okay.
Okay, great. So any further questions for Curly? Oh, yes, I see there's a whole bunch. Well, where are there?
Yes.
Yes, okay. So, oh, yeah, I was confusing the clapping and the raising hand. So, okay, Billy, you have a question?
Yes. Supposing that the inflaton were as light as the Higgs.
Lighter than the Higgs.
or as roughly as light as the Higgs, or maybe even is the Higgs.
Okay.
If you posit this dimension five coupling, would you be able to actually see that coupling in the collider experiment?
Well, then it depends on like the strength of, the suppression scale. If the suppression scale is as high as the ones that we are choosing of order 10 to the 16 GeV, then you don't. So this coupling is very similar to a coupling between axion and the standard model fermions. And for axions, we know that we get to the point where we can measure like FAs of order like 10 to the 10 GeV at most.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so with like the suppression scales that we are talking about, even if this phi is very, very light, you are not going to see it.
And where did those suppression scales come from?
So yeah, we basically say like we are agnostic to what is happening at some very high energy scale for the 10 to the 16, where we assume some like UV completion to everything takes place. And this is basically the remnant of that. So which is why like we choose these suppression scale at that scale.
Okay, in a grand unified picture, kind of picture, this would be the expectation value of the symmetry breaking of the further symmetry.
Off of the PQ symmetry.
If you were having an SU5 or an SO10 symmetry, then this
it's some sector that is not really coupled, not really like the standard model sector. So it is something else.
Oh, it's orthogonal, then it's orthogonal to the standard model symmetries. Yeah. But it's still some kind of symmetry breaking scale.
Yes, that is very high. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so I see that Latham has his hand raised, so go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, it's kind of related to what Lee just asked. Is there some version of this story where the Higgs is the inflaton, and in that case, you can still get a significant cosmological collider signal in FNL, or do you really need an extra field?
For the things that we talk about, this field has to be in a singlet, yes, so you need a new field.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe just one other thing. To what extent do the existing constraints on FNL imply constraints on the cosmological collider prediction for FNL?
So yes. So let's get to this plot again. So so the CMB. So the most of the constraints that we get are from the CMB, from Planck measure. So here the CMB is the 2D map, right? Well, the signal that we are looking for is a 3D oscillation. So it's an oscillation of three-point function in three dimensions. So now if you project this three-dimensional oscillating function in terms of this momentum scale onto the 2D surface, you lose a lot of information, which is why we think like the CMB experiments is actually not the best to look for the signature when the frequency of the oscillation is large.
Okay, thanks. So in other words, FNL of 100 in the cosmological collider signature is still allowed, at least for certain frequencies.
Yes, with the high frequencies that we are talking about. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
So Will, you have a question?
Yeah. So Jinwoo, you briefly mentioned how when you go to this true vacuum at large field values, that you were then going to be saved by thermal effects to get you back into the electric vacuum. But I sort of missed exactly. So during inflation, are you developing, you know, places where the total energy density is negative, and then afraid that it'll stop inflation and give you crunching, or somehow this stabilizes?
So here, like, we are still working in the regime where like this VUV is bigger than Hubble scale, but it's smaller than the energy scale during inflation.
Oh, I see.
Like this barrier height is, depth. Well, you, yes, I am always doing it with my hands, and I realize you cannot see my hand. where this dip is smaller than the energy scale during inflation. So you actually do not need to worry about that. Yeah, you're always inflating. Yeah.
Okay, so I guess there's like a portion of parameter space in like Higgs mass and top quark that gives you that, but then some other ranges would not give you that effect? and then you'd worry about crunching.
So this scale is order 10 to 11 GeV. So this scale, we are thinking of like maybe 10 to the 14, 10 to the 15 GeV. For like the Hubble scales, like if it is very large, is high scale inflation, that means like the inflationary energy scale is like 10 to 16 GeV, which is bigger than all of these energy scales we are talking about. Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
Okay, so any further questions for Junwoo? Okay, so if not, thanks again. We can applaud, I guess, or
yeah, thank you.